So my name's Liz Hall. I'm the editor of Coaching at Work magazine, and we're delighted to have Rita Simmons as a guest on this podcast for Coaching at Work Radio to mark Climate Coaching Action Day, March 2024. And Rita is the former president of the EMCC UK. She's also been heading up the EMCC Global Centre of Excellence on climate coaching, climate action, since the tail end of 2021. She's also the founder of her own practice, Enhance Coaching and Consultancy. And she's got a book coming out later this year with Routledge called Stepping Out of Otherness. So I'm really interested to speak to you, Rita, because I know the Centre for Excellence has actually brought out a lovely report that it's going to be publishing to coincide with Climate Coaching Action Day. So I want to hear all about that. I did have a sneak preview and it does look really interesting. But I was just wondering, before we do that, I'd love to hear why, what's going on for you around the climate emergency. Why do you care about this topic?
Thank you, Liz, and thank you. It's lovely to be here. I care because I can't not care. I see the evidence, I accept the evidence. I think that as humans, we've built this very egocentric world which is not sustainable. And I genuinely believe I think there is a better way of being. And I think that our role as coaches, as well as individual citizens, is to try and raise awareness and to try and get people into a place of active hope where they can actually see that there is a better way, rather than I think what we see at the moment, which is fear and denial.
Wonderful. Well, it's lovely that you're taking up the baton. And I'd love to hear some sort of nuggets from the report, if that's okay. What comes up for you if you want to share some of the insights?
Yeah. So, but for us in EMCC, and it's very much linked to the work of the Joint Statement Group and our collaboration with other professional bodies. But having done the joint statement, we really felt in EMCC, well, we need to move to action. It's fine, writing a nice document. So we've really focused on two things. And the first was, we really wanted to do this research because we felt there was a lot of myth around, what coaches think about climate action. We knew there were quite polarized views, within our membership community. And we really wanted to get more of a sense of the reality and where people were at. And to some extent, the research findings have borne out, some of what we went into it with in terms of that polarization. So we know that, at least half of coaches feel that we should be doing something in terms of raising awareness, raising systemic awareness around the climate emergency. But we also have a counter to that, which is 17%. 17% of our members surveyed felt that we really shouldn't be doing anything in this area. And, part of what we heard was, it's not our job to be directive, that we need to be client-led. We acknowledge that, and really what we want to do is hold the space for exploration of what does being active as a coach in this area actually mean, and does it mean being directive? My argument would be it doesn't.
Perfect. Lovely to hear a little bit more about that. And just to say, the report is called Exploring the Role and Boundaries of Coaching for Climate Action, isn't it? That's right.
Yeah.
So anything else you'd say about what's contained in the report?
Well, I think as well as exploring where people were on the cycle, we also did look at their approaches to bringing climate into their coaching. And we actually used John Herron's framework in terms of intervention styles. And what we found, which, won't be a surprise in some respects, is that it tended to be the more facilitative approaches that were used by coaches. We also asked people what tools they use, and we got some really good ideas in terms of, what members are actually using in this space. And we were also really, really keen in terms of directing our work that we asked people what they wanted from us as a professional body. And So we will use that. I mean, mainly it's around creating safe spaces for the dialogue. It's around resources, questions, how people contract for, discussions around climate in their coaching, some really pragmatic tools we were asked to develop, and that will actually inform the work of the group going forward.
Lovely, lovely to hear a bit more about that. And so there's no end in sight in terms of the centre you're carrying on.
Absolutely. And in fact, I think with the publication of this report, we also did an EMCC, what we're calling a Tough Talks, the first in the series with the president and two other members of the global exec. We've actually had, as a result of that, a number of people approach us to join the group. So the group is growing. It is vibrant. We will continue to do the work. We're actually doing some quite interesting work using AI to generate stories. I believe storytelling is a really, really vital tool in our work around this. So yes, the group is very much going to remain in existence, and indeed, as I say, it's actually growing.
Lovely to hear that. And you mentioned the cycle, which I'm familiar with, but I wondered if you wanted to say just a little bit about that for those who are listening and maybe haven't come across it.
Yes, so this is based, the Echo Cycle, based on the work of Peter Hawkins and Eve Turner, linked to the Climate Coaching Alliance. And it really moves people through a cycle of from curious and aware to active. And that's one of the things we use to actually test where we thought coaches might be. But I think, Peter, Eve, they would all say that it's not a linear process, that we can all actually be in different places at different times, with different clients, or indeed, in where we feel as individuals. But we certainly found we're very grateful to them for allowing us to use that tool in the research, because it's a really, really good way. I think the best way we thought to actually just take a stock take of where people are at.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a really helpful map. And what comes up for me as you reminding me of the cycle a bit is that sort of curiosity. And I'm just wondering if you could say something more about that, because obviously in terms of the report, people have, showed up as not being sort of, up for this work in some way, or not at this point. And given that you are, I'm just wondering if you could talk about that.
Yeah, so it's really easy, isn't it? And I think society these days increasingly pushes us to polarized positions. I think what I would say is, I accept the 17% who don't think we should be doing anything, and I'm really curious to know, why that is, and to have a dialogue around it. I think my approach is very much around understanding and around generative conversations. Rather than judgment, I think it's really easy, isn't it? When we're so convinced that our version of reality is right, it's very easy to bring judgment into the space. And I think it's really important. And we're very, very clear in the MCC group that, we are not coming to this with, a version of the truth that we believe is absolutely fixed. And I suppose, part of the curiosity is, well, how do we have some of these conversations? And I think holding some of the spaces, the tough talks, the webinars, we really invite people with opposing views into that space, because we need to be having the conversation.
Absolutely. And I certainly remember over the years that EMCC was always very much about being inclusive.
Yes, absolutely.
So, and given your book, I'm just wondering if there's anything you want to bring in here about how we might, not other people, obviously you've done a really deep dive into why we other people, and there's so much polarisation in these times, isn't there? It feels more so than ever. But yeah, anything you would share there that sort of feeds into this work for you?
I really enjoyed doing the research for the book. And although, it sort of took me back, my first degree was in psychology. And I think that sort of, that social psychology of why we have in groups and out groups, and what that means in terms of othering. I've certainly increased my awareness about that. I think One of the things we do very well as coaches, mentors and supervisors is the self-work and the self-awareness. And I think what I would say to people is where I think the dialogue around inclusion and othering can be helpful in broader spaces, including climate, is really something around questioning, internal questioning. So we are so, we're so exposed to all the negative messages. And again, that word curiosity, I think just holding judgment, bringing curiosity, finding out, having the conversations that you might be scared to have with people who are very different, but actually just, simply connecting as human beings. Sounds really simple, doesn't it? But it's so impactful when you can actually truly put yourself into other people's shoes. I'm a strong believer in collective action, in how we can actually mobilize and start to challenge. I think we're so ingrained in thinking that the way we live is the only way society can be organized. And I think as I've done the research for the book, I've really come to believe that there is a different way we can choose to live.
That sounds so wonderfully hopeful. And I was just thinking, you're talking about curiosity, and I seem to remember that there were some reflective practice guidelines or something that went alongside the report or as part of the report. I was wondering if you could say a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the reflective guidelines we actually had published previously, and again, I think it was coming from that point of, it's not our job to preach, it's our job to actually give people the tools. And so we actually used Ken Wilber's model there of the sort of four quadrants and invited people. There are a series of questions in each of the four categories. And we really invite people to think about, going from, the top left-hand corner, the I, to thinking about the collective and the, that more systemic perspective. And it's very much offered as a guide, as a tool for people to do their own work. We have and will be organising more sessions for people to come together and talk about it. But I guess that goes back to, perhaps what I said earlier, which is the work starts with self. And actually, we offer this as something to just help people work through for themselves. Well, what's the right balance for me? What's the right balance for me as an individual in terms of the choices I make? But actually, what does that then mean in terms of my practice as a coach?
Wonderful. And just thinking about that sort of systemic approach, is there anything more you might say about that? And how should we be approaching this?
I think that there is something around there's certainly something that I have come to realise about the interconnectedness of some of our challenges. So, in this we've gone from talking about climate to talking about othering. Now, some people might think, well, what have they got to do with each other? I think in terms of that systemic view, one of the things I would argue is that the climate emergency is linked to racial injustice, it's linked to poverty. All these things are interconnected. And actually, if we're going to solve them, we need to look globally and we need to look at connecting them. So, things like the Sustainable Development Goals, I think, could be a real hook in terms of how we start to connect some of this and how we then start to identify, well, what are some of the actions we might need to take. And it's going to take a huge amount of effort. It's going to take political will. It's not going to be easy. But, I guess my argument is, what's the alternative? If we don't act.
Yeah, absolutely. And my understanding is that the Sustainable Development Goals were actually sort of partly woven into the recommendations that you put out. So can you say anything about the other recommendations, or should we wait for people to read the report?
Yeah, well, I think what we're, I mean, we are being ambitious in that we really want to sort of start to position coaching in terms of helping organisations to deliver the sustainable development goals. But I think there's also something about what we do and what we model. So some of the recommendations, you know, we will be looking at things like accreditation at, you know, how we actually work with training organisations to encourage a more systemic approach, and to actually, you know, look at, we have, together with the other signatories, the code of ethics has now changed. You know, it definitely recognises that we have a responsibility not just to the individual client, but to society and to the planet. And I think we hope that through this report, we can sort of, you know, build on that in terms of, well, what does that mean in terms of how we make decisions about priorities, which research we support, how we work, as I say, in accreditation. So we're really facilitating some of the change that we want to see.
Brilliant. And I think there's something about a competency as well, that maybe there would be that sort of weaving that into.
Yes, yes. So again, you know, we may not be able to change all these things overnight, but we do have a competency framework, and you know, we will be looking at whether that needs to be adapted in light of, you know, changed circumstances, whether we need to focus more on that systemic view.
Wonderful. And so very ambitious, systemic, and my understanding is that you also believe that we each can do our own bit. So I wondered if you wanted to say something about that, because that's continuing to strike that note of hope, because it's so overwhelming otherwise. Anything you'd share about your own coaching work or your own life in general?
Yeah. So I mean, I guess I'm more intentional in the coaching work, and I, you know, I'm at an age now where I'm not quite thinking about my legacy, but I am thinking about, you know, what is the work that I can do that's really going to add value. And so I have got some criteria for who I work with and who I don't work with, and, you know, I'm quite intentional about that now, in a way I probably wasn't when I first started in my practice. And then I think there's the very individual things. You know, I've chosen to move to a more rural area where, you know, we've got some land, big ambitions around planting trees this year, going to plant at least 50. That is the commitment, and you know, try and grow more, try and consume less, try and, you know, just make those little individual decisions, because they all do add up, don't they? And I think, you know, if we know in terms of, you know, what we choose to eat and what we choose to buy, that, you know, if we all make those small changes, it will have a big global impact. The other thing, and I think it really speaks to your point about the polarisation, is I'm making a real effort to speak to people with very different views this year. I've actually taken the view very consciously that, comfortable though it is to be in your echo chamber, that's actually not going to deliver societal change. And so, again, perhaps being more thoughtful about making sure I have the conversations with people, prioritising that, conversations with people who have different views, different political views, just to try and get some of that connection across difference that we've talked about.
Lovely. And that sort of the core relationship piece and storytelling, which you've been mentioning. Wonderful. And in your coaching practice, any sort of little tips that you found work as it was ways to bring in climate in an unthreatening, non-agenda hijacking sort of way?
Well, I don't take credit for inventing these. I know there are lots of colleagues who work in this space. So certainly for me, the, you know, the legacy questions, the questions about, you know, what you would want your grandchildren to say about you, the questions about stakeholders who perhaps aren't in the room, and maybe questions about, you know, things like, well, what might be the unintended consequences of that decision? Just getting people into that sort of broader awareness of the impact of their individual choices. And the other thing I love is I love coaching outdoors. I love using nature. When I am on Zoom or Teams, I try to use imagery of nature in my both coaching and supervision practice. I do like to get outdoors and actually use natural space as a metaphor for some of the discussions we have in coaching.
Lovely, lovely. Quite sort of simple but powerful ways to bring it in.
Yeah, there was a stage in my life where I wanted to change the world. I've accepted now that that's not going to be. But if I can make little ripples in a few pools, then I guess in terms of my legacy, I'll be content.
Wonderful. And anything else you'd say just to wrap up, really, about your vision for coaching around climate action?
I think there is something about just taking lots of different strategies and lots of tools. So we are looking at storytelling, but it is about the collective. It's not about one individual. And so, you know, I'd really like to thank the people in the subgroup who did the reflective guide, but also, you know, we're talking about the research today, Roger from our group and Cesar, who was from the research group. I think again, what we've tried to model is collaboration. And I think the fact that we've had two centres for excellence working so well together on this, and you know, building on the legacy of the joint statement group, which is still going, I think there's something really important about us as professional bodies modelling the behaviour that we're encouraging of others.
Wonderful. Brilliant. So we'll include we have included a write-up on the report in Coaching at Work. But where can people get hold of the report outside of that?
So if people just go to the EMCC Global website, both the reflective guidelines and the report from March the 6th, the day of the Climate Coaching Action Day, they'll both be available on the EMCC website.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for doing this work, really valuable work that you've been doing in this space. And, you know, it's been an absolute delight to have you as a guest. So thank you very much, Rita.
Thank you, Liz. It's been a pleasure.